ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So tonight is very special tonight. This is a topic suggested to me by your temple president or his son. I forget which one of you. Yeah, Vishwanath Prabhu. This is his idea. Is he coming tonight? He's on a preaching program. So, this is his suggestion that we speak on the guru-disciple relationship. Because actually this is the most important principle. This is not my invention. This is the version of the great acharyas. The standard book of knowledge on the science of bhakti is called the Nectar of Devotion, which is a summary study of the bhakti rasamrita sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami. And in this book, Srila Rupa Goswami gives the basic principles of how to discharge devotional service. The first item is accepting the shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. The second item is becoming initiated by the spiritual master and learning how to discharge devotional service from him. The third item is obeying the orders of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. The fourth item is following in the footsteps of great acharyas, teachers, under the direction of the spiritual master. Number five is inquiring from the spiritual master how to advance in Krishna consciousness. And six is being prepared to give up anything material for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the first five items given by Rupa Goswami on how to take to the path of bhakti. The first five items are all related to the spiritual master. So just see how important this guru is on the pathway you're in. It's not until the sixth item that Krishna is even mentioned. Being prepared to give up anything to advance in Krishna consciousness. The seventh one is residing in a sacred place of pilgrimage like work or Vrindavan. So anyway, we can really see how essential this guru-disciple relationship is. It will make you or it will break you. If you have a proper relationship with the spiritual master, then your perfection is guaranteed. And if you don't have a proper relationship with the spiritual master, your spiritual destruction is guaranteed. So therefore, tonight we will discuss the importance of and the techniques of having a first-class relationship with the spiritual master. Someone may say, well, you know, my spiritual master, I hardly ever see him, and maybe he departed. Now he's not physically present. How can I possibly cultivate guru-disciple relationship if my guru is not physically here very often, or he may have left the planet? You see, how can I possibly improve my relationship? I have no scope for association very much, or at all. Well, I can tell you a story, true story. People often ask me, because I'm Prabhupada's disciple, they often say, tell me what it was like when you first met Srila Prabhupada. It's a very common thing they ask me. Tell me about the first time you met Prabhupada. Well, the fact is, the first chance I had to meet Srila Prabhupada, I refused to go. Because I thought I was God. And I didn't want the Guru to pop my little bubble, thinking I was God. This was in Berkeley, California in 1969. Makanlal Prabhu, my godbrother, had come to Berkeley to open. I was a musician at the time, songwriter, singer. So he met me at the college campus. He invited me. My Guru Maharaj is coming. Prabhupada is coming tonight to speak. He gave me the address. He gave me a flyer, everything. This was only 5 minutes from where I was living. Prabhupada was just down the street from where I was living. 5 minute walk from where I was living. It was very convenient. 5 minutes. Just two or three blocks away from where I was living. Prabhupada gave his lecture. But I didn't go. And then the following year, 1970, I again was visiting Berkeley, California. I went to the Hare Krishna Center there, and they said, oh, Prabhupada is going to be in Los Angeles. We're having a big festival there. We're driving down. You come with us. You can meet Prabhupada. Again, I wouldn't go. Because still, I thought I was God. And I didn't want the spiritual master to pop my little bubble. That no, you're not actually God. So, if I was so stubbornly avoiding Prabhupada's the meeting Prabhupada, you may wonder, how did I ever become his disciple? Well, the fact is that for some time I thought I was God, but after a while, it became obvious that I wasn't. Because things didn't go the way I wanted them to go. And if you're God, then everything goes the way you want it to go. And it was obvious after some time that it was not indeed, after all, it was not God. I wasn't Krishna after all. And I got very serious and I thought, I better learn how to serve God. And I was praying, Lord, please guide me on how I can become your perfect servant. And so when I was in that humble mood of begging God to guide me, then there was a knock on the door. I was staying here with my friend named Mike, and his friend Margaret came to the door and she said, there's a Hare Krishna Swami in town, and he will be at my apartment in 1 hour. So I was there. And it was His Holiness Vishnu Janamaharaj. Those of you who are disciples of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, you know, he and they were close friends, Vishnu Jan Swami and Tamal Krishna Goswami. He joined the movement together. So this was the closest friend of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He came to Austin and he came as a classical sannyasi. He had no money, he had no vehicle, he had nothing except a few Bhaktivedanta magazines, one case or two. Danda, blanket, razor blade, toothbrush, Bhagavad Gita, and first canto of Bhagavatam. That was it. That's all he had. No kartal, no mridanga, no harmonium. And he started a center. Within several weeks, he had a house full of devotees. It's amazing. So I watched this whole thing happen. And I was just amazed to see the spiritual potency this person had, Vishnu Janamaharaj. So he was telling me about his guru, Srila Prabhupada. And he was telling me all about the philosophy. And I was rather stubborn. I was thinking, well, I'll be a devotee of Krishna, but I'm not going to get initiated by the guru. Because then I had to give up my independence. Then the guru says, when you're a disciple, the guru says, you do this, you do. It's like in military. He gives an order, then you do. So I knew that. One friend had told me, if the guru tells you to jump off a cliff, you jump off the cliff. That wasn't this kind of a thing. One other boy, he was into Indian spirituality, he told me that's... So I understood that Guru was a very serious affair. You have to do whatever he says. And so I wasn't about to surrender to the Guru. I'll be a devotee of Krishna, I told the devotee. That's very good. I'll chant Hare Krishna. I'll write songs about Krishna, but I won't surrender to the Guru. But then the devotees showed me. They said, but Steve, look what it says here in the Bhagavad Gita. Tadvadeep and Ipatena, Pariprasnena Sevaya, Upadekshanti Te Jnanam, Jnananastakpadarshina. Just try to learn the truth by approaching Guru, inquire from him submissively, render service unto him, the self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So I was defeated. But was I going to surrender? Nope. I had no argument, but still I had a stubborn holdout. But then one day, this Radha Krishna Temple album, you know that Govinda prayers we sing every morning, it's from the Radha Krishna Temple album, produced by George Harrison, Mukunda Prabhu, and the London devotees. So you know the track that comes after Govinda, the Gravastika? It's so beautiful. Sam Saradava Naradiva Loka Dranaya Karyuna Ganaganatram Pramtasya Kalyana Gunarnavasya Vande Guroshi Chadanara Vindam. So, my service was to vacuum the temple room rug every morning. So I was listening to that. I was doing some seva, cleaning the temple room, and I was listening to this recording, and it was so beautiful. I was hearing the love in the devotees' voices, how much feeling they had for Srila Prabhupada. And I just felt along with them. At the same time, I felt that loving feeling for Prabhupada. By hearing their voices, I entered into the same mood. And it was so sweet, it was so wonderful. I had never experienced anything so sweet, so sublime in my life, that I became addicted. Just like a heroin addict. First time he gets his hit of heroin, he's addicted for life. If the heroin is very good heroin, all it takes is one injection and you're addicted for life. So I got one injection of Prabhupada praying, love for Prabhupada, by hearing the love and the voices of his followers. And I realized there's no feeling like this that exists anywhere in this material world. There's nothing so sweet and so wonderful as loving Srila Prabhupada. And that love for Prabhupada, I felt that love for Prabhupada, I didn't want to ever let go of it. And you know, there's only one way to keep that feeling of love alive for Guru, that you have to surrender. If you have truly loved someone, you must serve them, isn't it? You tell your wife, I love you, and then she says, but I'm sick tonight, can you wash the dishes? And you say, no, do it yourself, I'm going to the bowling alley. Is that love? Is it? If you love someone, then that means you want to serve them. If you really love them, you want to serve them. So the only way that I can go on feeling that wonderful love for Prabhupada was I had to surrender to him, give my whole eternal existence to him. So this is how I met Prabhupada. That moment when I realized there's nothing more sweet, nothing more wonderful than loving Srila Prabhupada. That's the moment I actually met Prabhupada, even though I've never seen him. Someone might say, but you didn't really meet him, you were just thinking about him. But wait a minute. When I had a chance to meet him, I wouldn't go. When I had a chance to see him face to face, I wouldn't go. But now, how can you say I didn't meet him when I surrendered my whole life to him? I must have met him. Otherwise, how could I have fully surrendered it? And it's confirmed by Srila Prabhupada. There's two ways that you can meet the spiritual master. One is his physical presence. That is called Vapu. And the other is called his teaching. That is called Vani. Now tonight we have Vimal Sharma here. Everyone can welcome him. This is his first time. He has been associating with me through the internet. He's never met me. But just by seeing my writings on the internet for how long? 2 years? For 2 years, he is convinced that he should be seeing me as his spiritual master. Just because he's been reading the teachings for 2 years. So he came tonight to meet me personally now that I'm here in Supa. So the real point is that the most important aspect of the guru-disciple relationship is not his physical presence. That's important, but it's not as important as his instructions. That's the most important thing. Now there's one item of prestige amongst the Prabhupada disciples. And that is if you can show a picture where you're in the same picture with Prabhupada. Now here's a picture that's considered very prestigious. Well, I'm here with Prabhupada doing this, doing that. But I want you to consider how many pictures we've seen of Srila Prabhupada with Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. Have you ever seen any photograph with Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta standing there together? Prabhupada was a householder. He wasn't living in the ashram. He very, very rarely, something like 10 times only, actually met with Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati in his whole life. So physical meeting is not the sum and substance of the guru-disciple relationship. The actual sum and substance of the guru-disciple relationship is how much you are dedicated to the order received from the spiritual master. Prabhupada emphasizes this point in the Bhagavatam. He explains there that you will not find Krishna in the bushes of Vrindavan, but you will find Krishna in the form of the order received from your spiritual master. That's where you will actually find Krishna. So do you think you can find Krishna if you neglect the order of your spiritual master? Just like sometimes we see someone becomes initiated disciple of one of our gurus in ISKCON and they go away to another guru. Do you think they will ever realize Krishna? No. They'll never realize Krishna. You want to realize Krishna, you have to, whatever instructions you receive from your spiritual master, you have to embrace those instructions as your very life and soul. Nowadays it's very fashionable to have a guru. There's so many gurus out there. Guru this, guru that. Dada Bhagavan. So many gurus out there. You heard of that one? Dada Bhagavan. Old man Bhagavan. Grandfather Bhagavan. Ridiculous. God never becomes an old man, but they have Dada Bhagavan. So-called guru out there. An old man, Bhagavan. God is Navi Yovanam. He's ever youthful. So, in this way, there's so many cheating gurus out there. Why cheating guru? Because they are not presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is. If we actually want to find the bona fide spiritual master, we must find that person who is presenting the teachings of Krishna as they are spoken in the Bhagavad Gita without any adulteration, without any addition, without any subtraction, purely as they are. That's the person who's the bona fide spiritual master. Just like your DHL delivery man. You expect him to be on it. If he opens up your package and he adds something to it or he takes something away from it, you report him to DHL as a dishonest employee. You must fire him. The honest DHL employee, he simply delivers the package as it has come from the sender. So the bona fide spiritual master, he never tampers with the message as Krishna has given to Arjuna. He leaves it exactly as it was given by Krishna without even the slightest adulteration. That is the bona fide spiritual master. So just because it's fashionable to have a guru doesn't mean that we should take guru as a matter of fashion. Like someone will keep a dog. No. Guru means where we will completely surrender ourselves. Sometimes people think, well, I have a guru, you know, it's like a mutual flattering relationship. I will flatter the guru and he will flatter me. But that's called enemy. Your flatterer is your worst enemy, Bhakti Siddhanta said. Someone who simply flatters you. So yes, give me some money, you give me some dakshina, and I flatter you. See, that is the bogus guru. It's very easy to find a guru who will take your money. That's not a problem. But to find a guru who will take away your anxiety, that is the bona fide spiritual master. That's what he is at. The bona fide guru simply wants to rob you of all your anxieties. And so, he's not after money, he's not after women, he's not after followers. He simply wants to help people become happy, that's all. That's the bona fide spiritual master. So such a person, when we find such a bona fide spiritual master, then we should fully surrender ourselves at his lotus feet. That from this moment on, I'm simply your property, Guru Maharaj. Whatever you want to do with me, that is your choice. I have no independence. I simply totally belong to you. You can engage me however you want, for now and for all of eternity. You see. That is the proper mood for the disciple. So, we have to have enough faith in our spiritual master that he won't abuse that power. That's why it's stated, one should take some time before you take guru. You have to study this person. Is he actually pure? Is he free of ulterior motives? Is he my genuine well-wisher? These things you must become convinced. You must come to the point where you have complete faith in guru. By associating with him, by serving him, by hearing him, meeting his followers, studying his teaching. In this way, we have to see that he's pure, that he's perfect in all respects. We can put our complete faith and trust in him. Now, some people say, well, I really can't put that faith and trust in anyone. I'll just be my own guru. And that's also a very popular thing. I'll just be my own guru because I trust myself. But there's a problem with that. The problem is we are conditioned. We're conditioned living beings. You know what that means, conditioned? It means we are subject to four defects. Our senses are imperfect. Just like you may hear a sound, and you may think it was a car backfiring, but actually somebody shot a gun. Because our senses are imperfect. Because the senses are imperfect, therefore we have a tendency to be illusioned. And if you're illusioned, what do? You make mistakes. And in spite of making mistakes, what do we think about ourselves? We think, I am great. That's called cheating. We parade around, yes, I am PhD. You say, yes, I am big, big this, I am big that. You see? So that because we have these four defects, imperfect senses, tendency to illusion, making mistakes and cheating, therefore we are not qualified to be our own guru. If anybody would be qualified to be their own guru, who would that be? Krishna. Because he's the original guru. But you know what? Krishna has a guru. To teach by example, he took a guru also. Sandipani Muni. His guru was a householder also. Sometimes people think they're a little surprised to hear that a householder initiating disciples. I thought only sannyasis could do that. You have to remember, Krishna's guru was a householder, and it's also mentioned in the Pancharatra. This is an interesting point. It's probably mentioned this in his purport. In the Pancharatra, it says that only householder Brahmins can initiate disciples. Only householders can initiate. But it's established in our Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya that sannyasis can also do. But the actual injunction, the Pancharatna, was only the householders can initiate. But it was established by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that because he took initiation from sannyasi. And I think Madhavendra Puri. So yeah, it was established that also sannyasis can do. But originally it was only householders could do. But later on it was established that sannyasis could also initiate. But now in ISKCON it seems to be there's many times a perception that only sannyasis can initiate disciples. But anyone that has the blessings of the governing body commission, doesn't matter householder, sannyasi, they can initiate disciples. And that is confirmed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Kiva vipra, kiva nyasi, shudra kene noe, jay krishna tattva veta, say guru hoy. Doesn't matter what you are. You may be a learned Brahmin, you may be a sannyasi, you may be a shudra, whatever your position is, if you know the science of Krishna, then you can be a spiritual master. So we simply have to find that person in whatever order of life they may be, householder, sannyasi, that doesn't matter. But whatever order of life they may be in, if they know the science of Krishna, then that person can become guru. And we can surrender ourselves to that person and become blessed with Krishna consciousness. So, very important thing. Brahmanda Brahmite Khonda Bhagavan Ji Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. After wandering through millions and millions of lifetimes in the repetition of birth and death, the higher planets, the lower planets, up and down to 8,400,000 species, Khonda Bhagavan Ji, one living entity who is very, very fortunate, received by the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna the seed of bhakti within the heart. Everyone stay, if you get sleepy, stand up. Or kind of like, you know, shake yourself a little bit. The mode of ignorance pulls on us, you see. Even we know we should come and hear the Vaishnava teachings because it will liberate us. The mind says,
Sleep.
Give that man a good slap. Wake up. This knowledge will save you from all suffering conditions. In fact, Prabhupada says the easiest way to become self-realized is to hear from a person who has realized Krishna. It's a fact. This is the easiest way to advance in Krishna consciousness. To hear from a person who has realized Krishna. That immediately situates one in the transcendental platform. Why did Prabhupada emphasize so much that we should have these classes regularly, morning and evening class? Because this situates us solidly. I remember when I joined our society back in 1971, there was no formalized Bhagavatam class like we have it now. And then Prabhupada established it. He taught us the song Jai Radha Madhava. When I joined ISKCON, that song wasn't there. No one was singing Jai Radha Madhava. So Prabhupada introduced this song Jai Radha Madhava. And he introduced this procedure of chanting the Sanskrit like we do on the board now. You see, that we didn't used to do that. In the early days of ISKCON, nobody knew any Sanskrit except for Prabhupada. Some of the first devotees who started chanting Sanskrit, the other devotees said, this is Maya, you must be, this is really pretentious. You must think you're hot, you know, you must be puffed up if you're quoting Sanskrit, thinking you're a great scholar. They were actually critical. And the first devotees started learning verses. But actually Prabhupada wanted us to learn the verses. Because this gives credibility. Just like in the courtroom, when the lawyer is arguing the case before the judge, how does he convince the judge of the validity of his argument? He cites the previous decisions of the court, isn't it? But Your Honor, in this case, the judge decided in this way. It was very similar to this case. And the judge decided in this way, in such and such, you know, court case, in such and such year. So then the judge has to accept. Because yes, you're bringing in previous judgments which relate to this judgment. So in this way, if we can quote from the Sanskrit verses, then it will give great credibility to what we're saying. It's not just my opinion. Of course, in this modern age, how many people accept the authority of Scripture? It's not very many people do. So the best thing is we have to learn logical arguments also. We can convince on the basis of logic and then say it is confirmed in the Vedas. So that way we have a twofold method. Logic and Scripture combined. And then if that doesn't work, you bring in the third one. You know what that is? Prasadam. And Kirtan. So the time you bring all that in, anybody, you know, we can conquer the whole world. Kirtan, Prasadam, and Prabhupada's teachings. Prabhupada's teachings have the logic and the Scripture all woven together perfectly. You'll see when you study Prabhupada's books. So many incredibly wonderful logical arguments that will convince even the most stubborn philosopher if he's a little open-minded. I mean, the most deluded philosopher, if he's willing to open his mind up and actually hear, and he will be enlightened by the words of Srila Prabhupada. If he's stubbornly antagonistic, however, he doesn't want to hear, then what can you do? Give him prasadam. So we can, if there's any questions that have come up so far, we can try to answer them. Anybody have any questions? I mean, most of you are initiated disciples here. How many of you are initiated disciples? Raise your hand if you're initiated. See, there's four men who are not. And then ladies, you're not initiated? You are. Everyone's initiated here? And then the ladies side? Except the kids. Okay. So mostly everybody's initiated. So everyone should be thinking, how can I, you know, make my relationship with my spiritual master perfect? That's the most important thing in our spiritual life. Every thought, every word, and every deed, in every time, in every place, in every situation, should be pleasing to our spiritual master. Just imagine if your spiritual master was with you at every minute and he could see what was in your mind at every minute. But how would you think, how would you speak, and how would you act? That's how we should be. And you know what? If you think that way, he'll be with you at every minute. He will be. He'll have his darshan, his sangha, for all of eternity. So does anyone have any questions about how to perfect their relationship with their spiritual master? Or does anybody feel you've already mastered it? You're perfect now in your relationship. Yes. Yes. Srila Prabhupada explains that the easiest way to advance in spiritual life is to hear from a person who has realized Krishna. So how do you recognize who has realized Krishna? So you can hear from them. If you hear from a person that you think has realized Krishna but has not realized Krishna, then you're in trouble. I mean, if you go to a medical doctor who turns out to be a quack, he may kill you by his ignorance of the proper medical science. So this is a very important question that Vishnupriya Maharaj has asked. How do you actually know who is a person who has realized Krishna? And you certainly wouldn't want to get initiated by someone who hadn't realized Krishna. If we don't even want to hear from someone, then what is the speaking of getting initiated by someone who hasn't realized Krishna? So how do we find out? That's a very important question. A person who has realized Krishna has no other business except for Krishna. That's the first symptom. Just like Srila Prabhupada, when he came, started his own movement in 1966. It's not that, he had his hours when he was on duty at the temple, and in the evening he would go uptown to catch a Broadway theater or go to a cinema. The spiritual master has no other business except Krishna 24 hours a day. He has no interest except to hear about Krishna, speak about Krishna, remember Krishna, serve Krishna, nothing else. That's the first symptom. If someone has actually realized Krishna, they derive ever-increasing bliss and satisfaction from always hearing about Krishna and talking about Krishna. They never tire of Krishna consciousness. That is one symptom of a person who has realized Krishna. And there are many others, but that's a good starting point. There are many, many others. Yes?
Many times we say that we can talk about Krishna, talk about Bhagavad Gita, and in between that topic, we could very little Mayavada or something like that, which is very difficult to pick up.
So, if I can hear you properly, I can't hear so well, but you're saying that someone may talk about Krishna, but then they may add a little Mayavadi philosophy as well. So Mayavadi philosophy, for those who do not know, means the idea that actually, ultimately, everything is one. I'm God, you're God, we're all God. Right now, we're just playing hide-and-go-seek with ourselves. And once we come out of hiding, we'll be God again. This is called Mayavadi philosophy. So, the Mayavadi philosophers will talk about Krishna, talk about developing love for Krishna. They will sometimes worship a deity of Krishna. They will sometimes also chant Hare Krishna with great delight and enthusiasm. But behind all of this bhakti is the desire to kill the object of their devotion and become that object of devotion himself. I one time read one book and it described bhakti yoga in this way. It said in the beginning of bhakti yoga, there is the worshipper and the worshipable. But at the end of bhakti yoga, there's no more distinction between the worshipper and the worshipable. It simply all becomes the worshipable. Whereas the devotee doesn't, the devotee becomes God. There's no more object, you know, lover of God and God who receives the love from his the lover. God becomes, the worshipper becomes the worshipable. But that means love cannot exist. Love means two, Krishna and you, Prabhupada said. If everything becomes one, then love cannot exist. And what is a world without love? Do you want to live in a world without love? Is that a very nice world to live in? A world without any love in it? So the Mayavad philosophy is a world without love. Everything becomes impersonal oneness. There's no more relationships. There's no more love. So those Mayavadis, they will chant Hare Krishna sometimes with the goal of merging in and becoming Krishna. They will sometimes also cite the scriptures as well. They will talk about love of God, but for them, love of God is a crutch to help you become God. And once you become God, then you can throw away the crutch. You don't need the bhakti anymore. You use the bhakti ladder to get up where you want to go. Once you get there, you kick away the bhakti. And now I don't need bhakti anymore. I can kick my guru. I can kick away Krishna because now I am the Supreme. This is my Mayavada. So we have to hear from a person who is actually purely presenting the Vaishnava philosophy. And as we have recently explained in Melbourne, the devil is in the details. If you really want to know if the spiritual master is bona fide, you have to go into his teachings and look at in a very detailed way. You have to analyze it. So you have to read Prabhupada's books to get a clear understanding. And then when you look very carefully, just like one time, I was preaching at the Rice University in Houston. I was in one professor's office. He's a religion professor. And I told him, you know, this Gita of Srila Prabhupada is different from the other Bhagavad Gita. He says, oh, I don't believe that. They're all the same. And I said, well, just hand me that Bhagavad Gita. I just pointed at one of the editions on his shelf. He handed it to me. I opened to chapter 9, text number 34. And, you know, it's the verse, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Majabjimam Namaskar. And how did the author translate it? He started off sounding just like Prabhupada. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Offer obeisances and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will become me. That's Mayava. The actual statement of Krishna is, you will come to me. But the Mayavadi, at the very last minute, they just make that slight little change which makes all the difference in the world. You will become me. See, that's Mayavadi philosophy. So we have to be very careful when we go to Guru. He may sound like a Vaishnava, lover of God. But if in the end of all of his bhakti, he becomes the object of devotion, and you, the devotee, become the object of devotion, and you run out of that place as fast as you can, because he's cheating you with false philosophy. Any other questions? Yes.
Didn't mention anything about disciplic succession.
Yes. The very most important aspect of Guru is he is coming in disciplic succession. Evam parampara praptam imam najashayo vidu. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, this is chapter 4, text number 2. He says, this knowledge was received through the chain of disciplic succession. The saintly kings understood it in that way. Prabhupada gives a nice example in this connection. In India, everything done very simply. They don't have, you know, big machines. So they use human beings for a lot of things that they might use machines for elsewhere in the world, not the West. So during the mango season, they will station workers up and down the mango tree. One worker, he goes, climbs up, he grabs a mango, he hands it to the next worker, he hands it to the next worker. This way the mangoes come down without getting bruised. Now if you just drop a mango from the top to the ground, it's ruined, it's no good, bruised. So in this same way, the knowledge is coming down. In the Bhagavad Gita, the end of the introduction, there's a list. Krishna is the original source of this knowledge. Krishna then imparts the knowledge to Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe. Lord Brahma instructs this knowledge to his son, Narada Muni, and disciple. Narada Muni instructs it to Vedavyas, the compiler of Vedic wisdom. Vedavyas is still living in the Himalaya. And a few centuries ago, a great Vaishnava Acharya named Madhvacharya from Udupi, he went to the Himalayas and he met Vedavyas personally. He became a disciple of Vedavyas and was imparted this knowledge by Vedavyas. And then from Madhvacharya, there are more Acharyas coming down to Lord Chaitanya and down to the modern time. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and now we, his followers, are also carrying on this tradition. So the knowledge, the guru has to be in a disciplic succession. If someone says, oh, I'm a disciple of such and such, you can ask, well, who is his guru? And who is his guru's guru? Because unless there's an unbroken line of disciplic succession going back to God himself, that guru is not bona fide. He's not connected to the powerhouse. You may have a very nice wire coming into your house, but if it's not connected with the powerhouse, you won't get any electricity in your house. You see? There has to be an unbroken connection between your lamp in your living room and the powerhouse, otherwise nothing happens. This is a very important principle, disciplic succession. Spiritual master has to be in disciplic succession. Any other questions? So everybody feels they've perfected their guru-disciple relationship. No room to grow, to make it better. Perfectly absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness. No obstacles to overcome. You've overcome all the obstacles now. Each and every one of you have overcome all the obstacles. Well, we could bring out our policy now. If you don't ask me questions, I will ask you questions. Yes? It says in the Bhagavatam that people in general who practice bhakti,
they people, the gurus who are in the, say they are in the simple succession, They recite Srimad Bhagavatam, but they do not teach their disciples the practice of bhakti. So,
yeah, if the spiritual master is not actually training the disciple how to do sadhana bhakti, then he's not bona fide. It's the duty of the spiritual master to purify the disciple by engaging them in sadhana bhakti so they can, you know. It's stated by Vrishabhadeva that unless the guru can deliver the disciple from the repetition of birth and death, then he should not become a guru. So that requires that the spiritual master engage the disciple, practically speaking, in bhakti yoga. They have to be absorbed. He has to fix them up in sadhana bhakti, 24 hours. But they're always engaged in sadhana. Whether they're at home, whether they're at work, they've learned, the spiritual master teaches the disciples how to be connected with Krishna in all times, all places, and all circumstances. The spiritual master is not doing that duty, then he's a spiritual master in name only. He's not really a spiritual master. What is it? Come closer or louder.
Even though he may be in disciplined succession.
Yeah. My spiritual master may be bona fide, but if I'm not purely transmitting to you the science of bhakti as I've learned it from him, then I'm actually causing a break in the disciplic succession. If I'm teaching you something different than what Prabhupada has given, then I'm, even though I may be a disciple of a bona fide spiritual master, I'm not really a disciple because I'm not following his instructions. So just because the spiritual master has a bona fide guru, does, you have to see if he's actually following his spiritual master. You see, if he's disobeyed his spiritual master. We see sometimes people who are disciples of Prabhupada, they disobey Srila Prabhupada. They leave ISKCON and go out to become a guru on their own, outside of ISKCON. But we advise people that you have to understand what sort of a spiritual master this is. He disobeyed his own spiritual master. He said we should remain within the society of this country. He disobeyed the spiritual master. So how qualified is that person actually to deliver you when he disobeyed his own spiritual master? Questions, Mark? Yes. What is he saying? You're asking if all the gurus in ISKCON bona fide? Well, the GBC has taken this position that they don't officially, they leave it up to you. It's your responsibility to read Prabhupada's books. They don't want to give a stamp of approval that this person, you know, is bona fide. The official approval process in ISKCON is called no objection. We have no objection if this person initiates, but it's up to the prospective disciple to actually decide based on Prabhupada's books and Krishna within the heart to understand this person's qualification. You can't rubber stamp someone as a spiritual master. Prabhupada, you can't elect an acharya by votes. You understand? So it's not some committee can sit down and say, okay, these persons, we'll make a vote, and if he passes the vote, then this person is qualified acharya. Acharya cannot be determined by votes of a committee. Majority of the committee just said, yes, he is, so he must be. No. So far I've met all so far my experience is seen all the acharyas in our society, initiating gurus who are currently doing that service. I've seen they're all very nice bona fide gurus. Now the fact is some did give up that service in the past. They were having difficulty, they gave it up. All the ones that I know of now, they're doing very nicely. It's really, you can't be done by, you know, official vote of a committee. You don't become a spiritual master by being voted. One becomes a spiritual master by manifesting the effulgence of a spiritual master, actually. By complete submission to one's own spiritual master, then his shakti is then manifested through you. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam, the one who is now the disciple, he is the next spiritual master. So it's a very simple process. Anyone who is actually a bona fide disciple, then they are naturally become qualified as guru. Natural process. So if you want to know, is a particular guru bona fide, you have to see, is he following Prabhupada? That's all. If you read Prabhupada's books, then you will know who's bona fide and who isn't. You won't need it, the GBC to tell you or some committee to tell you. You have Prabhupada's books, you read them, you sincerely chant your rounds, and Krishna will give you all intelligence to know who is a bona fide spiritual master and who is not. It's on your shoulders, the responsibility to know. I can tell you, but what if I'm not bona fide? What if I'm a cheater? I can tell you, oh yes, I'm a bona fide guru. I'm very bona fide. But what if I'm a cheater? You see? You have to yourself become learned in the Vedic wisdom by carefully studying Prabhupada's books, sincerely chanting your rounds, and then Krishna will give you the intelligence to understand who is a bona fide guru and who is not. You will know. It will be very clear to you. You can see how a person acts and how they speak. You can compare them with what you're reading in Prabhupada's books, and it will be very clear to you. This person is a wonderful, qualified spiritual master. This person is not. Be very clear. Questions, Mark? Yes. What is he saying?
Can a woman become a spiritual master?
Can a woman become a spiritual master? Great. In our Gaudiya Vaishnava history, we have the example of Janava Mata, the consort of Nityananda. She became the guru of the whole Vaishnava community. She had male disciples. So we do have the example of a woman becoming a spiritual master.
Yes.
There is no restriction that only men can be spiritual masters. A woman can also be a spiritual master.
Why didn't Srila Prabhupada give sannyas to women?
Why didn't Srila Prabhupada give sannyas to women?
Why
didn't Srila Prabhupada give sannyas to women?
Oh, sannyas is another thing. Do you know that sannyas means alone? Sannyasi means that he can wander alone with no material protection throughout the entire world. That is the meaning of sannyas. He's a solitary wandering mendicant. That is the meaning of sannyas yoga. You know that? Sannyas means alone. He can wander the world alone with no material protection. Now, if you want a woman to do that, what are you invite? Then you're just sending her out to get raped. That's all you're going to do. So if you want to give sannyas to women, and you're not doing your duty. Your duty is to protect the women. If the women are not under a man's protection, unscrupulous men will come and they will rape them. I guarantee you. Especially just like when the coup was going on. So many girls at the University of South Pacific, the Fijians went into the dormitory, they're raping the Indian girls. That is the nature of this material world. So if you want to give sannyas to women, that means sannyas order means they have to travel without any protection, alone. That's the duty of a sannyasi. That means you're sending the women out to get raped. So that is against Vedic culture. The women are always meant to be protected. But sannyasis, but Vaishnava is higher than sannyas. Sannyas is within the Varnashram system. When one becomes Vaishnava, that is a higher position than sannyas. You understand that? Sannyas is within the Varnashram system. Vaishnava is transcendental to the Varnashram system. I just received a letter from one of my female disciples today. She's a single woman in Chicago. And she was wondering about what, you know, the male, female engagements, this and that. I told her that there's no restriction. That, you know, as your spiritual master, my desire for you as my female disciple. I said, actually, first of all, you're not a female, I told her. You're not a female. I don't see you as a female. Krishna has sent you to me to deliver you from the cycle of birth and death. And I said, my desire for you is that you should become a very powerful spiritual leader on this planet, that you can deliver millions of people from the cycle of birth and death. That's the same order I get. I have the same desire I have for my male disciples. I have the same order of desire for my female disciples. I want to see each and every one of my male disciples and female disciples become powerful spiritual leaders on this planet. Sannyasa is not necessary. I'm a spiritual master with disciples all over the world. I'm not a sannyasi. Sannyasa is not necessary to become a guru. I'm not a sannyasi. I have a spiritual master. Yeah.
But when one is a sannyasi, when one has taken the sannyas for that, he gets more respect than a Vaishnava who is not a sannyasi. Why is that?
Usually a sannyasi gets more respect than a Vaishnava who is not a sannyasi.
Well, if people are giving more respect to a sannyasi than to a Vaishnava, it means that someone better has to educate them. They need to be educated. He took advantage of the... That's true. He took advantage of the custom, popular custom of the day for the sake of preaching. That's a fact. But actually, a Vaishnava is a higher position than a sannyasi. He used the social convention to his advantage for preaching. It was a strategy. But actually, a Vaishnava is a more respectable position than a sannyasi. A higher position. There's so many Mayavadi sannyasis. And what does Dorje Chandra say? Mayavadi hoi aparadhi. They are offenders. There's so many sannyasis who are considered aparadhis. You see? So sannyas in itself is not very significant thing. The real significant thing is Vaishnava. That is the real significant thing. Now sannyas is very good for a preacher. For a male preacher, it's a very good thing. He has so much energy freed up for preaching with. So we encourage our men want to be take up that position. A woman can also act in a very powerful way, but she needs to be protected by men. That's the difference. Because she has a body which is weaker and can be exploited. When you walk down the street, are you afraid of being raped? Are you afraid of being raped when you walk down the street? If you go through a dark alley at night, are you afraid somebody will rape you? No. But a woman has to be very fearful. See, that's a difference. That's why we don't give women sannyas. Because they are meant to always be under a man's protection.
Just to add to that, in Kali Yuga, sannyas is probably under the scriptures.
Yeah, actually in this, according to Shastra, because the sannyas ashram has been so much abused, it's actually forbidden, the sannyas is forbidden. But in exceptional cases, it can be given for Vaishnava. And then can be given the sannyas order for preaching. But actually it's forbidden. Sannyas order is forbidden in the Kali Yuga. The other day when in my email somebody wrote me and said, well, I told them, they had the same question about women being sannyasis. I told them the reason. He said, well, I'm not completely satisfied with your answer. He says, I'm only 59% satisfied with your answer. That's what he told me. So I told him, well, I'm saying it's a good thing I only have to satisfy Krishna and not you. Because that is the Vedic system. Women do not get sannyas. But that's not a downgrading of the women. I mean, I'm not a sannyasi either, but it doesn't affect my preaching. Actually, my experience is that having a Krishna conscious wife is better than sannyas. If you have a wife who's very renounced, like my wife, Vishnupriya Manaji, very dedicated wife, Krishna conscious, it's better than sannyas. Any other questions? Yeah. Yes. He said that they can be gurus, yes. He did. He said generally not, but it's like actually some lady professor asked him. A lady who was a professor in the university asked him that question. And he said yes, but generally they don't do. Because you see that you have to understand one thing. A woman has a different psychophysical nature than a man. Nowadays, the people are trying to say it's all one. There's no difference between a man and a woman, but that's completely bogus. Women have a certain psychophysical nature which is different than a man's nature. That's a fact. So in the Vedic culture, everyone is engaged according to the natural psychophysical nature. So they're most happy and most satisfied. So women can be a spiritual master, but generally they don't. Statistically, mostly men gravitate towards those roles in society. It's because that's the natural inclination. I mean, you study look at philosophers through the ages. You know, get a book of the great philosophers through the ages. How many women are great philosophers through the ages? I don't know if even one woman is listed in the great philosophers throughout the ages. Although a woman is certainly free to philosophize if she wants to. But woman's nature is not as much like that as a man's nature is like that. Because you see, there's Plato, there's Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, Marcus Aurelius, you see, Heidegger. You know, you study Western philosophy, you study in the university. How many lady philosophers were there? There was no rule of woman can't be a philosopher, but the women weren't so interested in philosophy. You see? Throughout the ages. Everyone has a certain nature, that's all. So woman can be a spiritual master. There's no... And sometimes they are, but it's just... Generally, by natural inclination, they would rather play a different role. They're not restricted to that, but it's just everyone in the Vedic culture is encouraged to act according to your natural proclivity and use that for Krishna. But my female disciples, I encourage them to also give classes. I have two of my female disciples already who give classes. I encourage them to give classes. Prabhupada said that in our Krishna consciousness movement, everyone is engaged equally as preachers, men and women both. We don't discriminate, that only men can give classes. We can only hear from men. Now we encourage everyone who wants to preach to be a preacher, men and women both. Questions, Mom? Are you satisfied? I'm back from the ladies' side here. Any questions? We encourage everyone to become a great preacher. Actually, Prabhupada says, and this is quite amazing, he doesn't discriminate between men and women when he gives this instruction. It's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's an amazing quote. He says that if a devotee will purely chant the holy names of the Lord without any offense, that devotee becomes, you ready? That devotee becomes Jagad Guru. And under his influence, or it could be hers too, under his or her influence, the whole world will take up Krishna consciousness. So I encourage each and every one of you, men and women both, to become such pure chanters of a holy name that you ladies can all become Jagad Guru, you men can all become Jagad Guru, and under your influence, the whole world will take up Krishna consciousness. Let's see. So actually, someone says, well, I want to be a guru, but this kind of is chauvinistic, so I can't become a guru because there's GVC is male chauvinistic. They're holding me back. I told my disciple today, I said, no, nothing is holding you back except your own limitations you're putting on yourself. If you want to be a powerful spiritual master to save the world, to turn the course of history, nobody in this movement is holding you back except yourself. That's a thing. Because Prabhupada says, anyone who chants the holy name without offense becomes Jagad Guru, and under the influence of that devotee, the whole world will take up this movement. That could be one of the children also. That could be a young child. That could be a 5-year-old child. It doesn't have to be even an adult. Prahlad Maharaj is one of our gurus. He is great Mahajana. He's a little boy. You see? So a child can become the spiritual master of the whole universe. They become a pure chanter of the name. A woman can become a spiritual master of the whole universe. A man can become. It doesn't matter the body. It just matters, have you given up the offenses against the name or not? You cleared all the anarthas out of your heart. That's the only thing holding you back is the anarthas. Anybody who wants to be guru, all you have to do is get all the anarthas out of your heart and you'll automatically be guru. Nothing to do with male or female. Simply has to do with the anarthas in your heart. Are you willing to give up your anarthas or are you holding on to them? You see? You know the story of the man and the rock? He was living in this horrible, desolate desert atmosphere. And across the river, it was a beautiful paradise with flowers and flowing streams and beautiful festivals and beautiful people with saris and dhotis and singing and dancing. And so they were calling him, come across the river. It's very shallow, you can easily, just no problem, just come and swim across the river. You can easily make it. But he had, there was one problem. He had a rock that he was very attached to. He had a pet rock that he was really attached to. And he said, but I can't swim with my rock. It's too heavy. I can't swim with it. I said, just leave it. He said, no, but I can't. This is my pet rock. I can't give up this rock. So he stayed there in a horrible situation because he was attached to his rock. So we may laugh at this foolish example, but actually that rock is our anartha. We can enter into the spiritual world of eternity, knowledge, and bliss right now, but we're holding on to these anarthas, pride, lust, anger, and greed. We're holding on to these anarthas, and because of that, we're remaining in this miserable condition of materialism. So anybody who wants to be guru, all you have to do is give up your anarthas, and you can deliver the whole world. By your example, yad yad acharati shrestas tat tare vetaravyam. So yad pramanam kurute lokas tadanavatate. Whatever standard you set by exemplary acts, all the world will follow your example if you become pure. So everyone can become guru, man or woman both. Doesn't require anything except giving up your anarthas, that's all. Any more questions? Time and tide wait for no man. We will stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.